you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour. Thank you for joining us at the Twilight Histories. In this episode, you're going to continue your adventure deep into the strange and sometimes terrifying multiverse. This is your adventure, and you are the hero. As a quick recap from the previous episode, you are part of a team of highly experienced mercenaries who have been hired by a rogue guide from the Twilight Histories. He wants your help to conquer an advanced Ojibwe culture deep in the multiverse. In this world, the Ojibwe were the only civilization to rise, so there was no competition, and therefore no need to develop weaponry. But when you passed through the wormhole, you ended up in a world devastated by nuclear winter. When a warhead detonated nearby, you escaped into a cellar, leaving Cass on the surface. You found a way to unlock a secret door in the wall and entered a tunnel. And now, turn on your lantern and enter the dark underworld. This is Ojibwe Miners, Part 3, by myself, Jordan Harbour.
You broke my nose,
Yamoira says through his hands. You and Lian Ji continue down the tunnel, ignoring him. You run your fingers along the rock wall. It's smooth and perfectly contoured. It must have been bored out of solid stone. There is no sedimentation, no wet stickiness, so it is relatively new. There is a trickle of water running down the bottom of the tunnel, leading somewhere deeper underground. Do you have any ideas? Lian Ji says. About what? Anything. No, not yet. Yamoira, what do you make of this, you say?
Screw you.
You come to a T-junction in the passage. The trickle of water splits. You look around and find some symbols carved in the sides of each, but your trip is unable to translate them. Lian Ji kicks Yamoira towards them. Well, she says. He stares at her, then turns down the right-hand passage. You and Lian Ji chase after him. What did the symbols say? Lian Ji says. Logic and chaos, he says, putting his hands down. His nose is very broken and there's blood all over his face. And which one did we go down? The one I chose, he says. You hear the sound of machines. Clanking, roaring, reverberates through the rock and up your legs and deep in the ground. The further you travel down the passage, the louder it grows. You find a door in the side of the tunnel. Yamoira keeps going, but Lian Ji motions for you to stop. You'll have to open it, she says to you. Her arms are still limp at her sides. Yamoira stops and turns. Careful, he says. You pull the handle down and slide the metal door along its track. The room is full of clothing on hooks. You approach one of the hooks. The clothing is thick and well-worn. It's covered in rock dust and brine. You take one of the suits. It's a full single-piece outfit made of hide. It smells like sweat and animal. What do you think? The Enchi says. I say we put them on, you say. We might need to blend in if we see anyone. That's what I was thinking. You forget we're here to make an impression, Yomoira says, standing at the door. Oh, you'll make a fine impression with that bloody nose. You help Lianji into her suit, then put on one yourself. It's much too large for you. The gloves and mask are built in, and there's a hood that seals it together. The mask has round eye holes made of thick glass, and when you breathe through the tubes, you have to suck hard. The air is musky and tastes of charcoal.
I can't talk in this,
you say. Lianji shakes her head violently, and her mask falls off. Aren't you going to put one on? You say to Yomoira. No, I'm already dressed the part, he says, and flourishes his hand through the air, presenting himself. His buffalo skin shirt is covered in blood, and one of his hair buns is unraveled. You look terrible, Lianji says. He glares at her, but says nothing. You come to a side tunnel, which sounds like the source of all the noisy machinery. There are thick tubes running along the ceiling, and you can hear the sound of human voices echoing from the walls. You smell crushed rock. Yomoira wants to keep going, and the sounds grow fainter as you continue down the passage. Lights in the distance, and hear the splash of feet in water. You hear the echo of voices. You put on your mask, leaving the flap open at the neck so you can breathe more easily. You help Lianji with hers despite her protests. Yomoira walks confidently in front of you. A group of people dressed in the same thick outfits you're wearing approaches. Their masks are off, and you can see their faces in the shadows cast by their lanterns. Their skin is bronzed, and they have high cheekbones like Yomoira. Their black hair is pulled back into neat buns. They do a double take when they see Yomoira. They slow down. They speak to him in a language you can't quite understand. Many of the sounds are familiar, and your chip is working hard to translate them. The sounds are definitely related to some kind of ancient indigenous language that took a different path in the multiverse. They seem concerned with Yomoira's face. One of them points to his nose. A man puts his arm around Yomoira, and he pushes it away. They look surprised. Yomoira speaks in a more authoritative voice, but they just look confused. He turns back to you. Where's that damn gorilla? He says in Mandarin for your benefit. The miners look surprised. Their eyes grow cold. They speak a few tight syllables and surround you. What's going on, Yomoira? The Enchi says. I don't think they're buying my story. The man in front of Yomoira starts speaking quickly with a demanding tone. Yomoira switches from an authoritative to a honey-smooth voice. The man grabs him by the arms and pulls him in, staring into his eyes. The others in the group pull yours and Lianji's masks off. They look stunned and angry. They grab you and drag you down the passageway. You're separated from Lianji and Yomoira and locked into a cell. The cell is pitch dark, and the steel door is locked shut with a boom. Hello? Who are you? You hear a man's voice coming from the dark. Your translator picks up the language immediately, though you feel you can handle it even without your chip. It's English, a few centuries old, but easily understood. Who are you? You say in English. Oh, thank God. You speak American. What's your name? You rack your brain trying to think of an American name, then give up and tell me your real name. That doesn't sound American, he says. I'm from India, you say. Oh, you speak American in India? Gosh, I get the two confused. India and Indians. What do you mean? Well, you've got Indians in India and Indians in America. You shrug it off. The poor wretch is obviously ignorant. Are you alone? You say. Yeah? How long have you been here? I have no idea. They kidnapped me. I'm just a miner. I heard they torture miners. Have they tortured you? No, but I'm sure they will. I heard they pull your tendons out and burn you alive. You walk around the room and feel the walls. They're rough-hewn and wet, probably from perspiration. It's hot in the room, and it smells awful. Dang, it's been a long time since I've talked to anyone. Sure feels good to speak good old American to someone. Do they speak American? Who, the Indians? I don't know. I think they just speak Indian. I only spoke to a couple of them, and they didn't talk much, only in Indian. You lean down next to him. You need to squeeze out whatever you can from his thick skull. Who are these people? You say. I don't know. Indians. Aren't they all the same? Did you build these tunnels, or did they? Well, that's just the thing. They seem to build tunnels better than us. I had no idea Indians could do that. I thought they just shot bows and arrows. You didn't know how advanced they were. What about the destroyed city up there? What do you know about that? There's a destroyed city? Yes, right above us. That's strange. There wasn't a city up there when I was there. The closest city I know of is Saskatoon, and that's a long way south. The city, right above us, collapsed. Buildings everywhere, bombs going off. You don't know anything about that? Oh, gosh. All I saw was one building in the middle of nowhere. And I mean, there was nothing else for miles. That doesn't make sense, you say to yourself. So, you say you're a miner, and these Indians are miners. What are you all mining for? Uranium. It's the best uranium in the world up in the Athabascas. Uranium? Oh, that makes a bit of sense. You remember the blast from the nuclear bomb. So you're having some kind of war with these people over uranium? Seems like it. I didn't know anything about it until I came down here, and then it was all these rumors around the Indians kidnapping miners and torturing us and having advanced technology and everything. I didn't know what we were getting into. Tell me more about that. How exactly did you get here? Well, about a month ago. I was between jobs down in Utah, and a recruiter in a fancy uniform came round and said he had work for us up in the territories, and the money was 4 times what I was getting in Utah as a coal miner. So I went for it. But there was all this secrecy. I figured it was just about the uranium. I know they make bombs with it, so I can understand that, but now I think it had something to do with these super-advanced Indians. So I went through all these medical tests, and there were soldiers everywhere coming and going from this big building out in the forest near Athabasca Lakes. They bunked me up with some other miners in tents outside. That night, we all slept real well, a real deep sleep with no dreams. And the weird thing is, when we woke up, we were actually in the mines, like right down in them. We had no idea how we got there. Maybe they knocked us out somehow. I'm a light sleeper, so I would have woken up if they tried to move me. And then we got on this underground train, and we got right down to mining. Why would they do that anyway? I said I'd mine for them. Maybe it was something to do with the secrecy, like when people get blindfolded when they try to kidnap them. But it's not like I couldn't see the building where we drove up to. It was right there. Anyways, it was weird, and I don't like it. So you have no memory of going from your tent into the building and down into the mine? None at all. I was out cold. And you don't remember seeing a city? No. Maybe they moved me a long way, and I come to think of it, I just assumed they took me into the building. Do you think they could have taken me down to Saskatoon? Or maybe Regina? Maybe the war started with Russia. Oh, God. Are there any other cities nearby? No. The last town we passed come up here was Fort Custer. It's just an army base with a gas station and a motel. Doesn't make sense to bring me all the way down there. That doesn't make any sense at all. No, you're right. Doesn't make sense. Could they have flown you somewhere? Well, I don't know. I did see an airfield. Remember cursing that darn thing after the long drive. Why didn't they just fly us in? But come to think of it, none of this explains the uranium. The uranium is all up in Athabasca, around the lakes. So that's where we gotta be. Not down at Fort Custer or Saskatoon. We're definitely up in the Athabascas. Do you think there could be a city somewhere around the lake that you don't know about? Could be. But I looked at a map when I stopped at the gas station in Fort Custer just to figure out where the heck we were. And I didn't see anything like a town around the lake. Do you think we could be under an Ojibwe city? An Ojib what? An Indian city. I doubt that. The Indians don't have cities, just reserves. Everyone knows that. They live out in the woods. Gosh, what I'd give to be out in the woods right now. Summer right now, and here I am stuck in prison deep underground. Summer? That can't be. What do you mean? I was up on the surface just a few hours ago, and there was snow on the ground. Snow? In the middle of summer? That don't make sense. They hit you on the head? They must have. But now, hold on. What about that nuclear war? What was that all about? You're right, of course. There must be a nuclear winter on the surface. You think we're under an Indian city? Yes. In fact, I know we are. But that doesn't explain how you Americans got under it. Or even why you're in Canada. Jeez, how long have you been down here? Canada's been in American territory for years. Right, I'm sure I knew that. You're dozing when the door clanks open and warriors flood into the cell. They grab you and the American miner and drag you out. The American is screaming about torture. Everything is blurry and there are too many sounds. You're put on some kind of cart and driven down the tunnels into a large cavern. You get a look at the American in the light for the first time. He's ragged and skinny, and his denim coveralls are filthy. He has buck teeth and a mop of red hair. He looks terrified.
They're gonna pull out our tendons,
he says, looking to your side where a hulking Ojibwe warrior is sitting next to you in the cart. The warrior is grim-faced and wears a hide suit similar to yours, but it's plated with steel. What's he doing with an American rifle? You say. I thought you said they were advanced.
Beats me. Would you look at that knife?
You said the miner.
Would you look at that knife? Beats me. I'm just looking at that knife,
the miner says. The warrior does indeed have an impressive knife. You look ahead down the tunnel. The wind whips against your eyes as you rocket down tracks. You bend into a turn, and then the cart comes to rest. The warrior pushes you and the American out of the cart. You walk down a passage lit by skull lamps. The skulls are upside down. You smell gasoline, which must be in the bowl of the skull. The flames rise from the open jaws. The American almost faints, and you have to catch his arm. You hear drumming. The drumming grows louder until you enter a large cavern lit by skull lamps. You see filthy American miners cowering in the center of the room. Around them are warriors, and at the front, a pyre is being packed with kindling, while a group of men and women in brightly colored clothing dance to the drum. Your cellmate elbows you in the rib and points at the pyre. You're herded into the center of the room with the rest of the prisoners. You look around, but you don't see Leonji or Yomoira. An elderly woman in a bright costume steps forward. She sings in a wavering voice and wafts sage and an eagle feather over you and the filthy American miners. "This is it. They're going to torture us and burn us," your cellmate says. Some warriors step forward. They grab one of the Americans and drag him to the front of the dancers. They lie him down on the ground and rip open his coveralls. One of the warriors pulls out a huge hunting knife, and the old lady wafts sage over it in some kind of blessing. The American on the floor is shaking uncontrollably and is probably too scared to scream. There's a hand on your shoulder and you jump. You turn to see a warrior, just as grim-faced as the others. He says something, and your chip manages to translate it as, "Come with me." You turn to your cellmate. "I hope it's quick for you," you say. His face is white, and his teeth are chattering. The warrior pushes you with his rifle. You're led through the crowd, but instead of being brought to the front, where the warriors are already beginning their dark work, he takes you to the back of the room, back to the carts. You get in one of the carts, and he sits down behind you. The cart lurches down the track and away from the nightmare scene. "Where are we going?" you try to say to him, though you aren't sure if you got the words right. Even then, your voice is still in your throat, your body racing with adrenaline that makes it hard to speak. The warrior doesn't answer. You pass many caverns and side tunnels, and you marvel at how expansive this network of tunnels is. It is truly an underground city. The cart ends at an elevator. You enter the elevator and descend. You travel deeper and deeper into the earth. You have to equalize your ears more than once, and you feel the heat steaming off the rocks from the pressure. You unbutton your thick hide suit. The air coming up is as hot as a tropical breeze in summer. The elevator comes to a stop. You enter a grand passageway, about 3 stories high and decorated with amazing, colorful art. Fans blast you with cool air, and the people milling about are well-dressed and seem happy. There are children and families. Follow the warrior past market stalls, where you see a vast assortment of different foods for sale. There are many side passageways, roadways leading to what must be an underground commercial district of some sort. As you pass through the crowd, you feel your chip building its lexicon with the exotic language. You follow the warrior down a series of passageways until you round a corner and are surrounded by warriors. They all turn and stare at you. "Black Knight contracting," comes a familiar voice. Yomoira steps out from the warriors. His nose is bloated, but at least he's cleaned up. He's now wearing the same hide and steel armor as the rest of the warriors, and he has an M16 slung over his shoulder. "Are you happy I saved your life?" "Where's Leonji?" "Her arms were dead metal. She was useless to me." Is she alive? Ymoira shrugs. It's time for you to do something useful and make good on all that cash I paid you. Get yourself suited up. Not unless you tell me where Lianji is. We're a team. If she's dead and I find out you're responsible, our deal is off. She's not dead. Prove it. I'll prove it later. Put that on. One of the warriors tosses you an armored suit similar to the others. Why? I'll explain later. Just put it on. Or would you rather I have them send you back to be tortured and killed? You follow the warriors through a maze of tunnels until you've lost all sense of direction. As the tunnels weave further away from the heart of the city, they grow hotter and more rough-hewn. Wretched Ojibwe families are squatting in the miserable halls strewn with garbage. They reach out their hands to the warriors and call for food. You have to hold your nose as you pass through these halls. You come to an elevator. Ymoira motions for you to join him. When you're in, he clamps the guardrail down and pulls the lever to make the platform rise. They went deep, not just for protection, but also for energy. The pressure and the heat is so great, they have almost limitless power down here. They can grow food. They can power anything they need. Mining equipment, weapons, foundries, you name it. It didn't look like those families we just passed had limitless anything. Ymoira shrugs. It's a stratified society. The Ojibwe are cut off from their supply of uranium by the Americans, so they've had to improvise. What are we doing here? Why are we dressed as warriors? We're heading into the American tunnels. We're going to kidnap some of their miners. Why? Because we're at war with them, and that's what you do in war. We're at war? You understand what I'm trying to achieve here, right? You're trying to be king. That's right. So, I'm going to lead a raiding party and prove my worth to them. How did you manage to get a raiding party? I was rotting in a cell. Let's just say I'm a good communicator. Now listen. You might actually be useful to me in these tunnels, but I need something really good from you. We've got to put on a show. This has got to be the best raid they've ever seen. Okay, but what do you think I can do? I need your demolition skills. That's something none of these warriors have figured out. Do you have a plan? Yes. We're going to get into the American tunnels. The warriors know how to do that. But we're not going to stop there. We're going to head straight into the American heart. Right to their particle accelerator. You blow it up and close the door to their world. Then, whatever Americans are left will be stranded here, and I can kill them at my leisure. Maybe I'll even leave some of them alive so I have an external threat to keep my people in order. But that's all in the future. Wait, go back a moment. You said the Americans have a particle accelerator? Are you telling me? Yes, the Americans are splitting worlds, just like the Twilight histories. That explains a lot, actually. But how? Aren't these 1950s or 60s Americans? That technology is way too advanced for them. That's because it wasn't the Americans who created it. It was the Ojibwe. They built the particle accelerator. They managed to connect to a timeline similar to ours in the 1960s. The Ojibwe tried for peace, but the Americans were Americans. They instantly went for their guns. They killed the Ojibwe explorers, passed through the wormhole, and took over the accelerator. Then, with captured Ojibwe engineers, they built an accelerator of their own on their side and left a big gaping tunnel open so they could pass through whenever they liked. And here's where it gets interesting. They started using this World War nuke target practice. The whole surface is in nuclear winter up there. We were lucky to get down here before we were completely radiated. They destroyed the surface? They just nuked the top off the world. But why? Seems pretty obvious to me. Why test your bombs on your own world when you can do it to someone else's? But that's terrible. And the Ojibwe escaped underground? Exactly. So now all they can do is raid. They steal some weapons, a few American miners here and there, and basically make a nuisance of themselves. But that's all they can do. The Ojibwe are still getting used to war. They had no concept of it before they met the Americans. So they're sloppy. But you and I, we know how warfare works. We're from a world that's full of violence. So we're going to flip the equation in our favor. All right, what are we up against? A hell of a lot. Imagine the Korean War. It's that kind of level of ordinance up there. Maybe even Vietnam. They filled this world with weapons, and they're testing new ones all the time. Like howitzers and tanks? On the surface, yes, but down in the tunnels, it's just knives and guns. Why haven't the Americans destroyed the Ojibwe yet? Surely they know where they are. Why not just nuke them? Dumb question. If they nuke the tunnels, they might destroy their own mines. The Americans are mining uranium. It's better to just suffer the annoyance of Ojibwe raiding parties than risk destroying their own mines. The uranium down here is high grade, and that's exactly what the Americans need to build their nukes. Couldn't they just bring the uranium across from their own world? They don't want to mine it in their own world because that would tip off the Russians. Oh, I see. So the Russians don't know about any of this? That's right. The Russians think the Americans are disarming themselves, but really, the Americans are more deadly than ever. They'll blow up 100 megaton bomb a day. Doesn't matter to them. The Americans are that powerful. Why do the Ojibwe risk attacking them? Why don't they just seal themselves off and try to stay low? That would make sense, but like I said, they've become a warrior culture. And in warrior cultures, violence is valued at a premium. It can get you places. Trust me, I've split enough worlds to know how this works. I was hoping to get a peaceful version of these people so I could retire in peace. It was really a perfect place, and I've seen a lot of different worlds. I was going to conquer them with just a few mercenaries and live out my years. But now, we have to do it the old-fashioned way. The only way to rise the ranks in these types of cultures is to raid. And the better you raid, the faster you rise. So that's what we're going to do. And hell, I like it better that way. Simpler, right? No thick bureaucracies to penetrate. No tea ceremonies or ridiculous rules of etiquette. Just simple warrior politics. Like math you can do on one hand. One fist, right? The elevator stops and you get out. It's much cooler on this level, and you button your suit back up. The warrior ascends the elevator back down to pick up the first batch of warriors. So, the plan is, we're going to penetrate into the American tunnels really deep, deeper than the Ojibwe have ever gone before. Then, you can work your magic and blow up the accelerator right in the heart. Okay, I got that, but even if we do blow up their particle accelerator, they still have a gateway on the American side, right? If it's anything like the Twilight histories, they don't actually need a gate at each side. So, if we want to ensure the Americans don't just come right back at us, we've got to blow up theirs. But even if we blow it up, the Americans will still have the blueprints, presumably, or maybe the Ojibwe engineers, so they can build another accelerator, right? Just get smarter and smarter. Okay, we'll blow up the American accelerator and make me king. I'll worry about the rest later. Takes off his backpack and hands it to you. You open the side flap. Inside are all your bombs and other tools. I'll do this on one condition, you say. What's that? I want you to guarantee Lianji is safe and that you're going to get us all back home. Even Cass. Yamoira strokes his chin. I'll make you a counteroffer. If you pull this off, I'll have my warrior set her free. But if you don't, I'll have them pull her tendons out. And yours too. Deal? You feel your anger rise, and it must be showing because Ymoira grins. I'm old-fashioned, he says, and holds out his hand to you. That was Ojibwe Miners Part 3 by myself, Jordan Harbor. Stay tuned for Part 4 coming up soon. If you're able to support the Twilight Histories, we'd really appreciate it. We have 2 full-length shows lined up for you in Patreon. One is a futuristic H.P. Lovecraft-inspired adventure into Antarctica by Kevin Valbonesi. The other is a mind-bending mystery that takes place in the 19th century in Paris, by Tristan Verboven. Both these stories have endings that will only be available to patrons. So while the stories will in time be published to the public, if you want to know how they end, you'll have to become a patron to do that. And we're really pushing this because Patreon is how we keep the Twilight Histories going. It's so important to us, and we really do appreciate everyone who joins and supports us in creating these epic stories for you. We can't do this without you. So from all of us at the Twilight Histories, thank you. I'm Jordan Harbor. Until next time, take care.